So welcome everybody to another joyful afternoon here at Dhammaloka. So I'll give you a preamble and then we'll just have a couple of meditation techniques to work with, maybe something new. And it's actually good with the practice to experiment with different, say, meditation tools so you can see what works for you, because people are very, very different. And some people tend to get better results as the weeks and the months go by, you know, with different techniques. So with the main preamble, so with the meditation process in itself, so if you look at the big picture, you know, your personal experience, one of the essential principles is, you know, you really need to get to know yourself, you know, get to know your likes, dislikes, you know, your weaknesses, your strengths, you know, personal preferences, you know, views and opinions and whatnot, because all these mental energies and forces in the mind essentially are going to, you know, if you're really aiming for real, say, peace of mind, you know, freedom from worry, concern, stress, you know, or you know, anything you can possibly think of involved on the level of mental proliferation, that you know, that's going to slow you down or obstruct you. So, you know, if you look at the scope of your life. And, you know, naturally people meditate for different reasons. Some people meditate to reduce stress. Some people are very spiritual. They're interested in wisdom or awareness, you know, developing good relationships with other people, increasing their patience and tolerance, you know, this kind of thing. There's many, many reasons why we start to practice. And, you know, naturally there's many effects when one actually develops the meditation over many months, many years, and people, you know, they tend to, even after several weeks, you know, one's family members can see the change in one, even if one feels that one's getting absolutely nowhere with the practice. The people around you tend to have a more, more subjective perception of you as far as the change in your character. So, if you look at this business of those things which actually slow you down in the practice, which are a hindrance, which are maybe a difficulty, an obstacle, that it all comes back to, it's largely one's feelings which drive the thought process. You know, it's all, you know, if you look at the four elements of the mind, you know, feeling, perception, you know, sankharas, which is like mental formations, you know, this ongoing thinking, proliferating process, mind process, and the conscious awareness of that. So, you know, largely one's feelings, you know, if you're talking about tangible things, you know, that you can relate to, it's largely your feelings which drive your thoughts and thinking process, because, you know, if any of you were very, very cool customers, you could essentially shut that down very, very quickly, you know, within the space of 1 or 2 minutes, and into very, very deep meditation. But, you know, for the vast majority of us who are very emotional beings, you know, we have our loves, our hates, our desires, our aversion, you know, all these different moods and feelings, you know, thousands and thousands of moods that we go through, that essentially we need to tranquilize all that in order to attain to very deep states of meditation and tranquility. Because, you know, you need that tranquility as a basis. If your mind is absolutely racing, you know, one has very, very strong feelings that, you know, it's going to obstruct one from actually seeing clearly, you know, to see oneself clearly and the people around us and the world we live in. And one of the reasonings is that you can have very highly intelligent people in government, in the military, in science, and you know, different areas of society, And you know, if these people have a very, very strong sense of self or worldview, that they essentially, their wisdom faculty, it's going to be impaired to a degree. And you can be highly, highly intelligent, but if one's emotions are very, very strong, it's going to colour, it's going to filter your personal experience. So yeah, so what we're aiming at is essentially to over time to cool the mind and tranquilize these very, very strong feelings, the excessive thinking, and become skillful with the practice and develop this ongoing peacefulness, which is usually in the background of one's mind on a day-to-day basis. So see, an easy one to work with is we'll do the this one gets quite good results. I'm currently spending quite a bit of time on the anicca, perception of anicca with different things, different dhammas, different objects in nature, mind states and whatnot. Because when you look at the Buddhist teachings, and especially in the suttas, that you see this time and time again, that the Buddha encouraged people to to contemplate the impermanence of their personal experience. And the reason you do this is to maximize the letting go, maximize the detachment, minimize the clinging to mind and body. So what we'll do is we'll work on, this is just one step, four elements, the changeable nature of the four elements that we have inside this body, that we see in this universe, the earth, wind, water, fire. So the way we do this one is we use a comfortable, and it's fairly narrow, but a comfortable focus. Focus on the feelings around the mouth, as we'll incorporate this with the breath meditation. Deepen the tranquility, focus on the feelings around the mouth, and that's quite a comfortable zone for most people. It doesn't give them headaches or too much tension in the face, and then you can induce the tranquility a bit faster than using a very broad focus, and like focusing on the chest or the abdomen. And the way we do this is focus on the feelings around the mouth as a precursor to the breath meditation. You're actually locating the conscious awareness of the breath by focusing on the feelings around the mouth, and naturally you're going to feel the breath on the periphery of that small focus of awareness. And then while we do this, we'll use these four mantras. Earth, to keep it simple, earth is changeable. So the way you do it is as you breathe in, focusing around the mouth, breathing out, earth, and then breathing in, leave a space, breathing out is changeable. Breathing in, leave a space, as you breathe out, wind, this is the wind element, wind, breathing out, breathing in, leave a space, breathing out again is changeable. So we're leaving spaces between with the words with the mantra formulation. So we do the four, you do earth, wind, water, fire, most of you can easily remember that, and then focus on the breathing cycle around the mouth. And we'll do that for the next 30 minutes. So with the most of you have been practicing for a while, but with the preliminary instructions, just get yourself in a comfortable position with your hands in the lap, your back nice and straight, head upright but comfortable. Just make sure there's nothing tied around the waist, wrists, and around the legs, and make a start with that, focusing on the mouth, and with those four mantras: earth, wind, water, fire, for the next 30 minutes. Thank you. anyone feels a bit tired or sleepy, just try to take slow, deep breaths and maximize your alertness. and that the mind is being disturbed by any particular thought process or say strong feelings, just zero in on that mind state and use this changeability perception, so the feelings, the people, the events, you can just look at the full picture, this full mind state, all those different factors, those sub factors, they're all changeable in nature. There may be 3, 4, 5 underlying factors, and you can just run through them, this similar principle, using this mantra formulation to maximize the detachment with that underlying state. you find that focusing on the mouth is too small, an area is hard to track, just focus on the full chest between the throat and the belly button. towards the end of the meditation, so you just reflect back and see what you did which brought good results. And I'll ring the gong 3 times so you can open your eyes when you're ready. Okay, during meditation, a lot of old memories like pictures and emotions kept coming up again and again. It is not helping my spiritual progress. How can I block these emotions and pictures from coming up in my meditation? So one of the key principles is with dealing with, say, obstructive mind states. It can be anything. It doesn't necessarily have to be incredibly unpleasant stuff. It could be absolutely anything, but the key principle is the ability to let go. This is maybe a bit difficult for some people, but this is where you've got to keep applying the insight practice and what I mentioned about the changeability. So you can use the easiest ones to work with are the emptiness principle, changeability, using equanimity. Using, say, force in the meditation doesn't necessarily work very well. I mean, you know, the wisdom practice, insight, it's always got at least 2 to 3 times more, more power, more tranquilizing power than pure samadhi. You can use as much force as you like, but it only works up to a point, you know, and it may not necessarily last that long. So you look at if I had something coming up myself, what I do is a general investigation. So for example, if I had maybe some kind of issue with someone, and then I go into that mind state, and I consider all the things which are going on there, the thoughts, the feelings, the attitudes with that individual. So come to, in a general sense, come to a full understanding of that mind state, and the mind, when it understands it, relax at least a little bit. You should be able to see it, and you develop that as a skill. And then even more effective is look at all the factors. If you've got some kind of obstructive state, look at all the different principles behind that, all the different scenarios and the events and things leading up to it, and the views and opinions and the conflict and whatever it is. There could be like 5, 6. There could even be 10 underlying factors which compose that. Maybe that thing that you have with somebody or some event in your life, and then you use to maximize the detachment, you use the changeability and the emptiness principle. It might take a little bit of time to kick in, maybe a couple of weeks. If you do this on a regular basis, it gets stronger and stronger because you keep reinforcing this kind of attitude. And so you go right through all the sub-factors, all the feelings, the thoughts, views, opinions in relation with that person, and then just go over them and over and over them. So you sit meditation or you walk, and then you use that mantra formulation. So essentially nothing is unseen or untouched by the investigation process, because if anything is left, it could be residual feelings or whatnot, and essentially it won't go away. It can keep coming up 100 times. It can come up 1,000 times. Even with the monks, you get mind states which come up 1,000 times. This is your part of your karma. That energy keeps surfacing again and again and again. And it takes time before you actually Before that energy actually dissipates. You know, you bring up the experience fully, you know, with the meditation process. You could have some underlying karma with that person. You could have had one, you know, you could have had one or two full lifetimes of karma with this individual, and this is the reason why you just can't drop some issue in a matter of, say, like days and weeks. It just keeps going on and on and on. And but you could have a very very long-term experience with an individual, you know, even one, two, three lifetimes in a row. You know, these things are possible from what the masters teach. And another little tricks, little tools you can use is the equanimity practice. So a particular experience in life, particular individual, painful feelings, for myself, when I go, I am the owner of my karma, I don't really resonate with that well. It might work for some people, but zero in on the individual, on the experience, the mind state, that all those factors which make up that mind state, what kind of words can I use? Connect it to one's karma. You know, those particular feelings are karma, those thoughts are karma. You're developing the equanimity meditation, where all these sub-factors making up this mind state are actually part of your personal karma. So the simple ones are, so for example, you've got some difficulty with some person named Robert. You know, Robert is the owner of his karma. When you use these kind of simplistic mantra formulations, you develop this attitude towards this individual that no matter what that person does or how they behave, that they're fully responsible for what they do. It's not connected with you. If they create problems, difficulties, essentially they are fully responsible for it. You know, it's not your problem. You're not, you know, it's nothing to do with you. Essentially, it's their problem and it's of their making. It's just a matter of this kind of, you develop this attitude, a way of actually looking at this individual. And there's all sorts of things you can do. You can do loving kindness. You can do compassion for a person, or maybe a painful feeling, an event in one's life. But essentially, there could be, you know, there's easily half a dozen tools there you can use. And but you need to see what actually works for you on the personal level. Maybe one or two work better than anything else, but it won't necessarily. That won't be like that for, you know, 3, 6, 12 months, because the energies in your mind are constantly changing, that you're going to have to keep swapping and changing. So you can run through, you know, if somebody's really traumatized, you know, something very, very heavy going on, you give them 6 tools to work with, you know, maybe in the space of an hour. You spend 10 minutes on each tool, each meditation technique, and then you see what gets the best results. You stick with that, and when it starts to fade away, when it loses its oomph, you keep mixing and matching, you know, because your mind is constantly shifting and changing. You know, you have to keep adjusting one's approach. So, in essence, you know, you have a number of tools you can use, and then you use them to the best of your, you know, what actually works for you, which brings good results.
Do you have any advice about mindfulness during mundane activities? How to stay on tasks during boring tasks?
For example, you know, because the monk's life can be pretty boring. Not all the time. It's a pretty good lifestyle. But that's something we're always in touch with, because we can't distract ourselves so easily. You know, you can get into books and files and little projects and stuff like that, but there's a limit. It's nothing like the world where it's just endless, endless, endless stuff. But one thing I find, if I was in that kind of situation, developing mindfulness with mundane activities, that the classic ones I do is just keep your eyes in a very, very relaxed way. Whatever technique you use, you do it in a very relaxed way. And keep your eyes on absolutely everything you do. You know, when you're out in the back garden, naturally when you're driving the car, looking after the kids, you know, doing this, doing that, cooking the meal, just a very, very relaxed way. Keep your eyes on absolutely everything you do, and then you develop this very It's like the attentiveness, this very relaxed attentiveness. And you may think that it's nothing, but you know, when you do this for 16 hours a day and you do it 7 days a week, I mean, it really kicks in. You know, you do it for a couple of days, and you will see your awareness and the mindfulness sharpen just with this very, very relaxed approach. And other little methods you can use is you use a mantra, very simple mantra. Could be happiness, peace, joy, bliss. And in the beginning, just so it's within a safe range, you just do it once, maybe every 60 seconds, right throughout the day and night, you know, 18 hours a day. And it's the kind of spaciousness. The format is spacious to the point where you can do absolutely anything. You can drive your car, you can use a chainsaw, you can engage people, you can run your company, and intellectually it doesn't slow you down. You know, you can still function, you can still think and remember at full speed. That this is what I mean by this kind of spaciousness. If you feel absolutely no effect whatsoever after 3 or 4 days, and then drop it down to 45 seconds, 30 seconds, but where the real focusing power is, you know, you just do it all day. You do it all day and half the night, in a way which actually suits you. And other little methods you can use is little things like this. This one came from Tenachin Anand when I went to stay with him. One of the monks was saying he had trouble with insight practice. He just couldn't think of anything to really reflect on, because life in the forest monastery is, you know, it's incredibly, you know, if you say in a very simple monastery, it can be incredibly dull, you know. There's nothing happening, you know. There's, you know, fair enough, I get different thoughts, feelings coming up, but so what? And so what he encouraged him to do to sharpen his, you know, because he was reasonably intellectual, that he had him actually investigate just continually his personal experience, you know, and the objects around him, things like, you know, why do you use a sitting cloth? What, you know, why do we use a cup for drinking? You know, it might sound very, very simplistic to you, but, you know, think about it. Why do you actually use a vessel to hold liquid? You know, why is a cup a certain size? Why does it have a handle on it? You know, these very, very simple things, it essentially sharpens one's investigative power, because you can do it with all sorts of things. Things like, so for example, you've got a sala, a simple wooden sala. You know, why, this one came from Lompur Panyuado, why are the steps on the staircase a certain width and height? You know, because of the dimensions of this physical body. And, you know, everything, the height of the ceiling, the length of the staircase, the objects that we have around us, you know, they're a certain size and shape. You know, you just look around you, you know, the size of this bag, you know, why is it a certain size? You know, why does it have so many pockets, you know, and why, you know, is this bench a certain height? You know, this might sound very, very simple to you, but you do this kind of thing on a regular basis that the mind becomes very sharp, and you're increasing through the, when you look at the jhana factors, applied and sustained attention, you know, you get energy coming up, which becomes joy, pity and sukha. You get the real tranquilization effect when the energy starts to rise in the mind, you know, so you're sharpening your intellect, sharpening investigation, increasing your peripheral knowledge, even if it's on a you might consider to be on a shallow level, but it's like putting together pieces of a jigsaw. You know, so for example, your daily life, you know, the objects around you, in your home, in your room, your living room, and you investigate that quite thoroughly. You know, you start putting these little pieces together, and then you put maybe 3 or 4 pieces together in a jigsaw puzzle, and you actually see more than you did previously. You get one piece, you can't see nothing. You put 3 or 4 pieces together, you start to see a sailboat, or you start to see a sunset or something like that. So, you know, you're starting to connect things together. And, you know, and what else could you do? Things like, you know, the chant practitioners, they focus on sound, and they sharpen their mindfulness by sound, you know, by focusing on sound in a very relaxed way. So there's all sorts of little tricks that you can pick up. You know, you can You can check PDFs on the web, you can get Dharma books and especially things like, you know, the ability to, because it's so fast, you know, word search, you know, load books from the web, things like, you know, like different meditation manuals from, you know, different teachers, you know, from different traditions and whatnot, and, you know, just word search and get all the different techniques and then find out what actually suits your character, what works for you, you know, on a day-to-day basis. But this whole thing with boredom, I mean, why do people get bored? You know, they feel, oh, there's nothing happening, it's not interesting, you know, I don't really enjoy this, you know, but you can work it, you know, different ways with this technique, sharpen the mind, especially wisdom practice. You know, people don't usually get very bored when they're developing wisdom in day-to-day life. You know, most of the Buddhists and most people in general, even the Christians and even the Muslims, and you know, they're interested in this type of mind process. Did anyone else have any questions at all? No. Okay, we'll finish up.